Welcome back to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt, and today we wrap up Stranger Things September Spectacular. It's been a long journey, my friends. Today we will reveal the hidden messages hidden in plain sight in Stranger Things Season 4. If you've been along for the entire ride, you heard Stranger Things Season 1 with all the MKUltra occult ideas presented, with Eleven being the new god, the new savior. And then you heard Stranger Things Season 4, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, where we wrapped up all the episodes. Now we're on Part 4. This is the conclusion where I'm going to break down what it was that we saw. And I'll give you my predictions for Season 5, just for fun, just for good measure. So in conclusion, I thought this season was pretty cool. I liked it. It was painfully long. I mean, the last episode was 2.5 hours. That's long for a movie. The denouement was 30 minutes. All right. And you know my beef. If the movie's longer than 90, you got to make it worth it. All that being said, I thought it was great. I loved it. I thought it was good. I like Stranger Things, though, so not a hard sell for me, right? So let's talk about some of the major takeaways of this season. First, let's decode this Kate Bush song, Running Up That Hill. Fun fact, the reason they chose this track was because Winona Ryder on set used to wear tons of Kate Bush shirts. And she was entirely the inspiration to put that track on the song. I also feel like there was some strange Mandela effect involved with this. You recall how we talked about the predictive programming in, I don't remember which part, one of the episodes. I think it was the second episode. Max is talking about the song and Lucas is like, no one's ever going to listen to this or something to that effect. Which is kind of strange because it would blow up on the charts. You know, how often do songs 40 years later hit the top of the charts? But the song itself was released in 1985. Apparently it hit number 3 in the UK, number 30 in the USA. But I'll be damned that I've never heard it before. Before Stranger Things, I'd never heard it. And I know a lot of 80s music. I listen to tons of 80s music. And also on the Rolling Stones top 500 songs of all time, they ranked it at number 60. How can I never heard this song? I feel like I've been Mandela affected. I just feel like that's a really strange thing. I'm not saying that that's the case. It could be. I just missed it. I just missed this track for 40 years. And that Rolling Stones top 500 is trash anyway. If you ever look at their like top 500 hip hop songs, it's like, what are you talking about? I don't know who comes up with that. I think they try to be controversial just to get people to talk about it and look it up. Anyway, what's this Kate Bush song about? We don't even need to analyze the lyrics. We can go right to Kate Bush. She said, and I quote, it was trying to say that, really, a man and a woman can't understand each other because we are a man and a woman. And if we could actually swap each other's roles, if we could actually be in each other's place for a while, I think we'd both be very surprised. And I think it would lead to a greater understanding. And really, the only way I could think it could be done was either, you know, I thought a deal with the devil, you know, and I thought, well, no, why not a deal with God? You know, because in a way, it's so much more powerful, the whole idea of asking God to make a deal with you. You see, for me, it is still called Deal with God. That was its title. But we were told that if we kept this title, that it would not be played in any of the religious countries. Italy wouldn't play it, France wouldn't play it, and Australia wouldn't play it. Ireland wouldn't play it. And that generally, we might get it blocked purely because it has God in the title. which I find interesting, right? I mean, the whole show is about it's about a spiritual battle, right? And this track chosen, which I would say embodies and typifies the whole season, was called Running Up That Hill in 1985. But they appears to me they've changed the title track. If you look it up now, it says Running Up That Hill with a parenthesis of A Deal with God. So they were able to get that God word in the title again. And all of that, you know, and that doesn't really matter, right? But what I found interesting was that the concept she's referring to, which I think is a great idea, the idea that a man can't necessarily understand what it is to be a woman and vice versa. This is very much, again, talking about Carl Jung. We talked about him many times on this show. But Jung defined archetypes of the anima and the animus. And the anima defines the unconscious female qualities that a male can possess. The animus defines the unconscious male qualities that a female possesses. And in a conversation with my Orthodox priest, he was trying to define the Trinity and the understanding of God, which man cannot understand the mind of God. Just not possible. But the best way we could try to understand the Trinity, he said, and I'm probably going to butcher this, I'm no theologian or priest, something to the effect of the love between, you know, we were made in God's image, male and female, and the love between male and female, and the way we sort of, if you picture the yin and yang, that's the similar idea to the anima and the animus. We have our primary sort of function and programming as men or women, and then, but each of us has a very kind of minute part of the others. I don't know, personalities, traits, genes, whatever. Just enough so that we can try to understand each other, we can mate. But when things are clicking and the two are locked in union and the love experience between the two, that is supposed to be God. Which I found interesting that all of the, even some of the occult practices, even the tantric cults that believe Shakti and Shiva are locked in sexual union, and that is actually what our world is that we're living in, even the occult practices have a very similar understanding of what God is. And that's kind of more or less what Kate Bush's song is about. And in a way, it's about making the Faustian bargain, but not with the devil, but with God. And the deal isn't for fame and fortune, it's for understanding, which is actually pretty beautiful. It's for reconciling the opposing forces, though, too. The opposing forces of male and female. Just how Eleven goes through the process of understanding good and evil. Remember how Papa, Dr. Brenner, gave her that whole speech about how she has to embrace the good and bad within herself. So is the song Illuminate confirm? Is it a cult? Hard to say. It's dancing on the line here. And that's where I get hung up in this realm of what do I understand and know and believe about the occult? Because sometimes some of the ideas they present are pretty good. Next, pizza. How could we not talk about the pizza? They introduced this character, this stoner named Argyle, and he works for Surfer Boy Pizza. It was actually my least favorite character. I don't know. I just found him to be annoying. But it's fine, right? I'm trying to lighten the mood. So it's fine. And apparently they created an actual pizza based on this character. It's got pineapples and jalapeno, which, you know, the whole show they joke about this. Because, and look, I've lived on both coasts, and I understand the mentality. In fact, I worked at a pizza shop in southeastern PA there. Thin slice, New York style pizza is all you can get on the East Coast. I never had pineapple on a pizza. Far as I knew, that was sacrilege growing up. But then when I moved out west, everyone does it. I said, excuse me? Fruit on a pizza? Are you crazy? But I've fully assimilated. And, you know, he always says, don't deny it till you try it. And it's a fact. It's the only way to go. You know, I got to do pepperoni and pineapple. It's the perfect combination. It makes for the perfect slice. I don't know what to tell you. I'm very sorry for all my East Coast people. I'm very sorry to tell you. They figured that one out. And jalapenos is even better. Throw the jalapenos on there and bam, good to go. Now, fun fact, you can call a phone number, 805-45-PIZZA, and Argyle, the stoner guy, can give you a message. I actually tried that. It works. Point is, it's curious to see this show full of occult symbolism, full of conspiracies, to throw in this major pizza subplot. Eleven even crosses over, not in the bathtub, but in the pizza dough freezer. And I think you might know where we're going, because I'd be remiss to not at least mention the interesting, possible, allegedly connection of kids to satanic ritual abuse, to ritual magic, to adrenochrome, to the emails about the pizza. You know? And if you don't know what I'm talking about, the theory, not my theory, I'm not condoning, condemning, denying, approving, I'm just mentioning it. The theory is that children can be traumatized and put in a state of fear. And perhaps some kind of sick, weirdo, evil demons can use that fear as a form of sustenance called adrenochrome. This is an idea represented in many ways. We've talked about it for many shows in the past. Dr. Sleep shows it with steam. The Shining, arguably. What was the other big ones? If you followed me for the World of the Worlds 2019 series remake, we covered that. Monsters, Inc. does it. It's about using this sustenance. Scaring kids as if there's a quality to that they can take advantage of. And this could tie you into the Archons. You know, David Icke talks about this idea, and it comes from the Archons, these shape-shifting lizard people. You can go a lot of directions with it. And it is very strange. Now, Bledsoe said so. You know, we're fans of each other, friends, show friends here. They did a show on Stranger Things Season 4, and it's very good. And they mentioned how traumatizing children can serve as a shortcut to get to the dark side of the Kabbalistic tree of life. And this is where the Klepoth reside. Now, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to make contact with the demons? Well, I mean, if you haven't watched Stranger Things, that's what the show is all about. Now, granted, the kids are trying to sort of cut off this thing. But the point is that some people are trying to make contact. They're trying to get through, like the Russians with the Stargate in Season 3. And also recall in Nightmare on Elm Street, Nancy is in the tub when Freddy Krueger visits. And how strange, we talked about this whole show, Freddy Krueger is in the show. Robert Englund, the actual character, is in the show. And what is Krueger in the storyline? He is a pedo. Notice also, if you're watching the video, for this special occasion, I wore my Nightmare on Elm Street sleeveless shirt. So, yeah, there's this pizza element that we can't ignore. Next, satanic panic. Was it real? Was it real? This idea that, oh, in the 80s, people were so naive. They thought that satanic cults were everywhere and they were going to ritually murder their kids and they were trying to ban all this music. Like, all that stuff happened, right? However, and I will give you this. I do think it's possible there was an overreaction. But I do think these groups exist. The Order of the Nine Angles is one particular one. I did a whole show on that. I think it was a bonus episode last year. But the truth is, there are satanic cults and satanic killers. That's a truth. Look to Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole. These guys claimed to have killed a whole bunch of people for this satanic cult called the Hands of Death. But then later they're also like, oh, we're making that up. So who knows? But it's a very strange story. Otis Toole, his grandmother apparently was a Satanist who subjected him to rituals, because the satanic ritual abuse is typically generational. She would take him on grave robbing and stuff like that. And he claimed that him and Henry Lee Lucas killed 108 people for this cult called the Hand of Death. And Otis Toole supposedly killed John Walsh's son from, you know, from America's Most Wanted. Now, Lucas, he confessed to over 600 murders, which would actually make him the highest body count serial killer ever. He got convicted on 11 actual murders, got the death sentence. But then it got commuted to a life sentence because of Governor George Walker Bush. Now, isn't that strange? Isn't that strange? Didn't we talk about the significance of 322, the skull and bones, this season? We did. Part of the secret societies, the Rosicrucians, perhaps, this Illuminati network, who's allegedly part of this whole satanic elite. Why on earth, especially on top of the idea that George Bush infamously had put more people to death in the Texas prisons than any other governor, including mentally handicapped people. But for some reason, he found it in his heart to let Henry Lee Lucas get off the death penalty, the guy that was this contracted killer for this satanic elite cult. And it's so bizarre. They can't jump over their asses hard enough to exonerate these two from all these murders. It doesn't even make sense. Even though Lucas died 20 years ago, they're still doing DNA testing to disprove his claims. In 2019, they proved 20 of his victims were not his. Meanwhile, on the other side of the equation, we got a guy like Damien Echols begging to do DNA testing to prove who murdered the kids. And they won't do it. They won't look at it. And everything I know about, you know, granted it's from watching police shows on TV, everything I know is like these cops, these detectives, they want to just solve the case and move on to the next one. There's a lot of stuff to catch up on. So it's very weird how they're trying, going through all these great lengths to disprove these claims. Now, if you go to this interview with Max Call, he's the guy who wrote the book on Hand of Death, the Henry Lee Lucas story, which I was able to secure a copy. Shout out Dr. Anteater hooking me up with that. I'm going to read through it. So stay subscribed and stay tuned for more on that if I find more in there. But Max Call had conversations with Henry Lee Lucas. And he talks about this inner circle of this satanic cult on this interview that, what is it called? SerialKillerCalendar.com is where I'm reading this from. The interviewer says, from what information Henry gave you, wait a minute, from what information Henry gave you any kind of outside verification can pinpoint any kind of headquarters? That doesn't even make sense. I don't know what he's asking. Doesn't matter. Max, the author of the book, replies, Henry identified where the training camp was, and that was in the Everglades, Florida. He notified the FBI of it. The FBI did an overfly and flew over the area looking for the signs of the camp. Henry told them why they couldn't spot it from the air, but they would not go into the Everglades, into the airboats, and find it. They wouldn't take the time to do it. I personally think they did, and they found traces of where the camp had been, but it had been moved because it was a portable camp. I think they had found traces of where the camp had been, but it had moved, and for various reasons for which I will never understand, they didn't want to admit that such an organization existed. This was the authorities. Henry told me they had explained to him that he should not say anything about the hand of death because it would create riots among the people. To know that there were 2,000 adherents to this religion walking the streets of the country, killing at will. You have to understand that in the satanic church, when you become a Satanist, you admit that you're already dead. As far as the world is concerned, you are already dead. They cannot do anything to you, therefore you can do whatever you want. If they kill you, all they are doing is taking nothing, because you are already dead, and it takes that kind of faith to believe that in order to do the things they demand you to do. Faith is a very funny thing. It takes precisely the same amount of faith to believe something for it to believe in Jesus as it would to believe in Satan. It takes the same measure of faith. It takes the same measure of faith to be an agnostic as it does to be a priest, as it does to be a witch, as to be a nun. Faith is constant. We have to believe in something before we can be it. And if you believe there's no God in your faith, then that's your religion. Interesting, because Stranger Things is about a spiritual battle. But right now we're just trying to prove that the satanic panic, while maybe it was overzealous, is rooted in reality. And I always like to say that, you know, sometimes we have to take things into perspective as to how scared of things we need to be. Like on a like a risk matrix, probability to impact kind of thing. Let's look at a guy named Gil DeRay. We covered this in our Dr. Sleep film review back in December 2019, I believe. Gil DeRay, he was a knight and lord in the French army, friends with Joan of Arc, who she was channeling spirits. In 1432, he was accused of killing hundreds of kids in occult rituals. He was condemned to death because his friends confessed to this guy doing the crimes. And in the trials, they revealed how he was sodomizing children before killing them. And one of his servants said that he would wine and dine the kids, strip them naked, hang them with ropes while pleasuring himself onto the child. He would take the child down and kill them through decapitation, dismemberment, slicing throats, breaking necks. He would desecrate the children by doing the grossest things after they died. One of the servants said this. He said, when the children were dead, he kissed them, and those who had the most handsome limbs and heads he held up to admire them, and had their bodies cruelly cut open and took delight at the sight of their inner organs. Very often, when the children were dying, he sat on their stomachs and took pleasure in seeing them die and laughed. Now, maybe you're thinking, well, maybe this is just a crazy dude. Sure, I'll give you that. But listen to this. This is what's going to blow your mind. Aleister Crowley said that Gil DeRay was the male equivalent to Joan of Arc, and his main and only crime was the pursuit of knowledge. So he seemed to be cool with him. In 1992... a Freemason Grandmaster of the Grand Lodge of France retried the case and found him not guilty. And now they claim Gil DeRay is a victim of false charges, although many historians assert that he is in fact guilty. Now, I don't know if you see the parallels here between this and the Hand of Death, but it's this weird way of like trying to exonerate these people. Which, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe. I don't think so. In the original trial, this is where we get into the satanic element. In the original trial in 1438 showed that Gil DeRay was seeking enlightenment through alchemy and demonic channeling. Again, aspects of what we see in Stranger Things. He was trying to summon a demon who went by the name of Baron. And this demon signed a contract with Gil DeRay, and the demon wanted to be fed body parts of children. So there you go. Not so good, right? And then there's all these other familiar murderers that a lot of people are familiar with. We got Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, Ramirez. Was it the Night Stalker, Ramirez, Charles Manson. Then you got the whole Order of Nine Angles cult. That might be the 2,000 people walking around from the hand of death. But none of that matters for now. We're just trying to say, look, the Satanic Panic is a bit of a whitewashing, I think, of trying to dismiss some scary things. But let's talk about what the actual messaging of Stranger Things is all about. It's showing us the evolution of man with 11 as the star child, aka the Philosopher's Child. Now, if you recall, the first season, we talked about how things popped up, proving that there's an arc throughout the series the creators want you to follow. We got season one and season four with very similar messages. So it's all planned out, right? And it's interesting because in season one, we talked about Tim Leary a bunch. And then he shows up in the crossword puzzle in season four. And Papa uses those nursery rhymes to have these MKUltra victims go into their altered states. And, you know, so this MKUltra Montauk child abuse thing continues throughout the series. Eleven's mother, she had the Minerva owl and the white rabbit in her bedroom. And the white rabbit shows up as the light bright in season four. And Victor Krill's daughter in season four is named Alice. And there's all the rainbow symbolism. El, short for Elohim, meaning the gods. The number is 11. 11 is the number of magic. 11 also the superior model for humanity. But anyways, a lot of these themes that we see with this dark side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and the fallen angels, the Klepoth, the demons that exist on the other side who want the blood sacrifices. But what's most important is that we talked about in season one how Joyce's house, right, because the first season is all about Will Byers being possessed by the Mind Flayer. Will Byers' storyline in season one at his home, the house number is 149, which, if you recall, that's the dimensions of the monolith. And it's perfect squares. It's 1 squared, 2 squared, 3 squared. Geometrical perfection there. And that's the dimensions of the monolith in 2001 Space Odyssey, which is Kubrick's film showing us the evolution of man through alchemy. And I wrote a whole book on it called Kubrick's Code. In fact, you can get on my Gumroad store, you can get a Kubrick's Code ebook download and the video, a 2.5-hour video I made for it, just explaining the whole thing. But in 2001, the final scene is the Star Child, man evolving into Star Child. Astronaut David Bowman becomes enlightened through the alien intelligence of the monolith, through the alchemy, and becomes the Star Child. And it's the release of the Prometheus on Earth. And 11 in Stranger Things is the parallel to that. She is the Star Child. And 11 goes through that alchemical process. I'm going to read to you from a book called The Complete Idiot's Guide to Alchemy. The rose in general is a symbol of the operation of conjunction, the mystical marriage of opposites. The rose represents the regeneration of purified essences and their resurrection in a new compound or body. The white rose is associated with the white queen of alchemy and represents the feminine, receptive, contractive principle of lunar soul. The red rose is associated with the red king and is regarded as masculine, active, expansive principle of solar spirit. Now, recall we were talking about the Kate Bush song and its emphasis on the opposing male and female forces. And in a way, you could say that's part of this alchemical process. The rose red color, said psychologist Carl Jung, is related to the aqua permanence eternal water, or blood of the soul, which are extracted from the first matter. The union of white and red roses, of soul and spirit, symbolizes the birth of the philosopher's child. So it tells you right there, the union of white with red roses is the symbol for the birth of the philosopher's child. So you would think, okay, Isaac, you're saying 11 is the philosopher's child. Could we find a symbol of white with red roses? Well, hold on to your hats, everybody. Let's finish this passage. Also, white roses were linked to the white phase of the work and the white stone of multiplication, while the red rose was associated with the red phase and the red stone of projection. Now, the philosopher's child is also known as the philosopher's stone, right? Which symbolizes as a child of the red king and the white queen. And in a way, you could say Vecna is the red king, because remember, his whole land and his little upside down was red. They make a big deal of that. And 11 would be the white queen, because remember, she was in white most of the show in that white baptismal gown there. And it represents the melding of the higher and lower nature of the spirit and soul, achieving enlightenment or evolution, whatever, the star child. Well, recall how we said 11 was going through this individuation process from Carl Jung. And we saw her pinned to a rose on the shape of a cross while she was wearing white. Remember that? I made a big deal of that. Furthermore, you find out she's wearing white pants, a white shirt, and that white shirt has red roses on it. And to be fair, they look kind of more of a shade of pink. And I'll put this image on the Instagram. You'll have to see it for yourself and see what you think. And the last scene of the last episode, while she's wearing this white shirt with the red, pink, red roses, she picks up a dead flowers that could be a rose. I don't know if it's a rose or not. I kind of don't think it is. I'm not certain of that, but it could be. The point is, what I'm trying to say, I think 11 shows us the birth of the philosopher's child or the star child, just like in Arthur C. Clarke's 2001 A Space Odyssey, just like in Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End, where all the children become evolved. It's about the evolution of man, unlocking man's seedy supernatural powers to become superheroes. And for good measure, Aleister Crowley was into all this. He used the rose cross symbol in Thelema to symbolize the great work. So 11 is performing the alchemical great work, aligning to all of the occult masters. And that's what this show is all about. It's about performing the great work through 11, revelation of the method, showing the occult practices for all of mankind. And in the show, it's accomplished via, mind control techniques and trauma and abuse, occult practices that, oh, by the way, some of this stuff was really happening in real life. MKUltra was a real thing. Montauk is a theory, but it was a real place. And I think that's what they're showing us. Now, let's talk about predictions for season 5. If 11 has in fact become the philosopher's child, if she has evolved through this conjunction of opposites in alchemy, because like I said, we have all this opposing force symbolism throughout the whole series, well then what's next? How can we make a prediction for season 5? I'm going to do it. I'm going to reference again The Complete Idiot's Guide to Alchemy, because I'm an idiot. It says here, on the psychological level, the child could be a new mental attitude of confidence and optimism that cannot survive in the everyday world of family, coworkers, and stressful responsibilities. For those reasons, conjunction is often called the turning point or pivotal operation in alchemy. If the child of the conjunction survives, it will be nurtured and grow into something entirely new and empowered during the operation of the red phase of alchemy. Now, that final red phase of alchemy is the rubedo. So 11 is going to go from the white queen of the albedo to the red king of rubedo. This means the philosopher's stone was produced, completed, and base metals can now transmute into gold, right? Remember, it's all about turning lead into gold, Saturn into the sun, meaning the integration of opposing and rejected elements and the personalities and the rise of the true self. What are we talking about? Well, for 11, she had rejected elements of her personality. She will now integrate them, and she will pursue her true will, as Aleister Crowley advised. And for her, I believe, in season 5, this will be the understanding of her mother and the reunification with her. Terry Ives, right? That's her mother. And if you recall from season 1, she took part in MKUltra and went through similar occult practices that 11, or Jane, did. So Jane is the suppressed form of 11. And like Papa told 11, she has to become whole by accepting good and evil, right and wrong, male and female. So in a way, 11 and Jane are the two altars for her. We hear that Terry's father was into conspiracy theories, and so was she. That's what the Stranger Things fandom webpage says. And the last we knew, Terry Ives was in a vegetative state. So I think she's going to come back to life and reunify with 11. And then there's this other consideration that 11 is the star child for a larger role in humanity. She will become the star child like David Bowman, digital consciousness. She could abandon her bodily form and become a stream of consciousness. Just like we see in the 2001 Space Odyssey novels, if you read the sequels, that's what happens. Everyone, all of humanity evolves because the monolith showed us the way and we all become streams of consciousness. Immortal, streaming through the universe. And you see this idea in Star Wars even. The Ascended Masters. Helena Blavatsky's Ascended Masters. And Helena Blavatsky, of course, created Theosophy, which of course inspired Wizard of Oz, which has the rainbows. Going over the rainbow, we saw that theme many times in this show. So there you go. That's my predictions for season 5. Her mother will come out of the vegetative state, and 11 will individuate with Jane, her suppressed version of her child self. And on a larger note, she may become an advanced stream of consciousness, like the Star Wars Jedi Masters. Well, it's been a fun journey, everybody. Thank you for joining me on this. If you made it this far, I really appreciate that. I appreciate you hearing me out. This was a lot of work. It was a labor of love. I couldn't tell you how many hours I put into all this, from watching it, to researching it, to typing it up, to filming it, to all this. I mean, this is 60, 70, 80 hours. So thank you. If you appreciated it, leave a review. Leave a good review. I need some 5 stars. I got haters, Russian troll bots or whatever they are, leaving 1 stars. And if you bought the videos, thank you. If you haven't, if you want to support the show and you want to keep these HD video copies of this, go to my Gumroad store. Thank you for your support. Thank you for being a great listener. Till next time, stay woke.